Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Peter Giannini. I represent James Short, the petitioner. I am going to try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'll see how well I do. Your Honors, Mr. Short did not get a fair trial. He was convicted by accomplice testimony corroborated by a jailhouse informant. Both the accomplices and the jailhouse informant committed perjury. Without the testimony of either the accomplices or the informant, he could not have been convicted. Mr. Short's trial was not fair because the prosecution knowingly allowed perjured testimony and withheld material evidence about the informant and the accomplices that the jury was entitled to know in order to fairly evaluate their testimony. And I have listed several NAPOA violations and Brady violations, or at least three NAPOA violations, and that is the knowing perjured testimony of the jailhouse informant that he was not receiving any consideration for his testimony against Mr. Short, and the knowing perjured testimony of each of the two accomplices that they were going to be spending years in the youth authority when, in fact, they knew at the time that they testified that they would not. And I believe that their lawyers knew it, and I believe that the prosecutor knew it at the time that they testified. They, in fact, did plead guilty the same day that they testified against Mr. Short at a hearing afterwards, where it was put on the record that they would be going to the youth authority when one of them was statutorily ineligible and the other was going to be excluded by widely known standards regarding his age, his level of criminality, his involvement in the crime.
Yeah, Mr. Jim, may I ask you a question? As I look at the record, I don't see any preserved Brady claim with respect to the accomplices, that is, Frangello and Weathers. I do see a preserved Matthew claim. I realize that this court granted a certificate of appealability on the Brady issue, but I don't see how we could have done that providently. If the issue is not, in fact, preserved. I don't know that it makes the slightest bit of difference to your position, but I just wanted to clarify it with you.
I mentioned that in my reply brief, that we did raise in the district court that as far as the accomplices were concerned, that there was a NAPOA issue of them testifying.
Well, I think there's an accurate issue. I don't question that at all.
Yeah. And that implicit in that was the fact that that they had that the prosecution knew ahead of time that that they had been given consideration that they were not that had not been disclosed. And the trial court was aware of it. And
didn't rule on it.
Well, he did rule on it. He said that What he said was, I find the jailhouse informant to be a pathological liar. I find that he committed perjury.
Well, I'm not talking about Chambers. I'm not talking about Cisneros. Chambers is another infamous informant. Cisneros. I'm talking about Weathers and
Frangello.
Yeah, because as to them, I don't believe there was Brady. As I said, I'm not sure it matters. I mean, I would think you would.
Well,
the position would be doesn't make any difference because well, I think your
point was that the my point was that the Superior Court did address the aspect of Weathers and Frangello and the fact that
let's just put that aside. Okay. Let me follow up on the two accomplices only for the moment. Put Cisneros aside.
Okay.
As to them, why is the why is the material that would have been known material? Because it's obvious in both cases that they got a staggeringly huge benefit. That is, they each were liable for a second-degree murder charge that carried a 15-year sentence in prison, which they traded off for no more than 5 years. And a California Youth Authority commitment. Now, sure, in her case, everybody should have known that she wasn't age eligible. And in his case, they didn't know that he would be rejected or not. They may have figured that he probably would have been. But here's the real point is, what real difference did it make since they knew they were getting a huge benefit? It just would have been great frosting on the cupcake, wouldn't it?
Well, the difference between, I mean, the fact that it was reduced from 15 years to 5 years was
a... Well, and a huge difference between spending your time in a California correctional facility or spending your time at a California youth authority facility. I mean, big, big, big difference.
Well, I think recent studies about what goes on in the California youth authority and what it is like there.
Well, I'm not saying. Okay. I think you see my point. I just wondered what your response was.
Well, my response is that had it been known that they were 5 years, 15 years, it's still time in prison. It's still a lot of time in prison. And the difference between 5 years or 15 years in prison and walking out the door when you finish your testimony, that's a difference. That is, I mean, they would say anything to do that. And they were the only witnesses who had anything to say about the percipient events that happened. There was no corroboration of anything that happened in terms of the actual crime itself, other than from them. The only people who identified people at the crime identified them. Nobody identified Short. As far as the Superior Court made all of these findings, it made the findings that Cisneros was a pathological liar. It made the finding that he had perjured himself. And said, and then used the wrong materiality standard and said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to toss out his testimony and see if there's any evidence left to convict him. Well, that's the wrong standard. I mean, the standard is there any reasonable possibility that the perjured testimony could have affected the jury? And the Superior Court made a finding exactly on that point and said it had to have affected the jury, but he used the wrong materiality standard. And then he went on and said, well, what that leaves us with is the issue of the deal for the accomplice witnesses, and that is, for him, he says, that is the crux of the case. And he says, and I find that the burden has shifted from the petitioner to the respondent to justify what they did in this case, because the petitioner has made an initial sufficient showing. And then inexplicably in the minute order says, I mean, it's a one-sentence minute order. This is not a reasoned decision. This is a one-sentence minute order.
Well, it is reasoned, but the reason is that the evidence at trial overwhelmingly convicted defendants. So the question for us, I think, is whether that is unreasonable under the AEDPA standard to say that there was overwhelming evidence.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense in terms of anything that the Superior Court had said in any previous hearing, where the things that I just said about what he said about the informer, what he said about the accomplices, what he said about the burden shifting, and then this is out of the blue. This is an unreasonable determination of the facts based upon the evidence presented at the hearings. I'm sure the court is familiar with Jackson versus Brown and the progeny, the line of those cases where the court analyzes the NAPWA violations first.
Well, I don't understand why Jackson has anything to do with this case, because it was a pre-AEDPA case, and we're bound by in an AEDPA case to ask what the U.S. Supreme Court has said. Again, I don't understand it makes any difference to your position, but that's what we've got to do is look to Bagley and Kyles and nephew and...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the only reason that I find Jackson is helpful is that it discusses all those cases. And Jackson didn't discuss any new law. Jackson didn't make any new law. You think it did? Well, I mean, it certainly was consistent with Ninth Circuit, previous Ninth Circuit law.
It still may be different law from what the U.S. Supreme Court has said. Anyway.
Bagley cited, Jackson cites Bagley repeatedly, cites Kyles, cites Giglio, cites Napoli, cites Brady. And it cites the correct standards for the differences in materiality, the differences in, you know, the Napoli violations. Under another Ninth Circuit case, which Hayes versus Brown, is any reasonable likelihood that the false testimony could have affected the outcome? I mean, you just can't say that there is no likelihood that the false testimony of the informant that the petitioner confessed to him that he did it and why he did it when he was vouched for by the prosecutor who said in his closing argument. This is a confession. It gives a motive, and the prosecutor says, "I personally think he is believable," and the Superior Court found that this had to have had an effect on the jury. That's a clear Napoli violation. I am getting close to the end of my time. I'm going to try to reserve it. Thank you, Your Honors, and it's nice to see you again.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Tom Shea on behalf of Respondent. Let me first address the issue of whether the L.A. Superior Court's December 2nd, 1991 minute order was a reasoned opinion. It's clear, based on the language that the Superior Court used, it referred to overwhelming evidence, and then after that...
Well, look, let me ask you this. I assume it's a reasoned opinion. But whether we review it independently or whether we review it somewhat deferentially, how can that bottom line stand up, given the fact that Cisneros, there is no question about the falsity of his testimony. He admitted it. It is false from beginning to end. It's not unimportant, because it was a confession, and there is no more powerful evidentiary tool for the prosecution than a confession. Weathers, Dunn's testimony is essentially worthless. She was all over the face of the map and loaded beyond belief, and had a self in, and had an interest in trying to get it short rather than her boyfriend's sister. The bullets, while consistent with the kind of bullet that was the fatal bullet, there's no other significant evidence that connects the bullet with them. I mean, it's just consistent, but they're all over L.A., and they can be used in all sorts of guns. The bottom line being, it seems to me, this is one of those cases where it's almost inescapable that you cannot have any confidence in the verdict. And I have neglected to mention that the accomplices obviously were very self-interested, and they, too, their testimony, too, was subject to question, even if standing alone, it would save the verdict.
And with my colleague's permission, I want to add one more thing before, which is that the jury asked for a reread of Cisneros' testimony. So it's clear, even beyond just normal logic, that it was important in the decision-making process.
Your Honors, let me try to address these issues in turn. I think I did address all of the concerns in our briefs, but let me highlight some points here. First, as in just talking just strictly as to the Napoli claim as to Cisneros' testimony that his low term that he was getting in the pending case had nothing to do with his testimony against Petitioner. As to that specific violation, there are several reasons why that testimony, that Cisneros' testimony could not have affected the verdict. And let me first.
Counsel, you're moving away from the central point of the question that Judge Reimer and I collectively have asked you, which is Cisneros said this defendant confessed, but that was false. This defendant didn't confess, or if he did, no one witnessed it and no one testified about it except this guy lying. And so I think you need to face that specifically and not the peripheral things about whether he was or wasn't getting a benefit.
As to that specific issue, as argued more fully in the briefs, adoptive admissions are essentially a confession. And here he made several, petitioner through his actions and his words made several essentially what were adoptive admissions. And I think even Jackson versus Brown talks about.
They were lies. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm referring to is Dunn and Salt both testified that they overheard petitioner making threats that he,
we're off on a detour. I mean, the point is Cisneros said he asked Short whether anything would be found in the car. Short said no because Vince got rid of it all and poured battery acid in the car. He asked Short, he said, why did you do it? And Short said, I killed him because I didn't want to have any witnesses. I mean, and that was a lie. It was fabricated from beginning to end.
Yes, and there's two points I want to make. First is that, as pointed out by the district court, the circumstances of that confession, it just was incredible. I don't think any jury would have believed him.
Well, then why did they ask for a readback? I mean, what you're saying is that the only clear evidence in the case that unequivocally tied this defendant to this crime, the only direct piece of evidence, couldn't have had any effect on the verdict. That doesn't make any sense.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with you. And I think the key point here is that Cisneros was not the key witness. He was not the crucial witness. The key witnesses were Weathers and Frangelo.
Well, it's interesting because the prosecutor has a memorandum to file. It was dated May 28, 1981, that says that his case turns on Cisneros, that without Cisneros, he has no case.
Right, because the other witnesses were either self-interested or intoxicated at the time.
Again,
unique Cisneros' testimony.
First let me address Cisneros, and then I'll return to Weathers and Frangelo. But as to Cisneros' in closing argument, the prosecutor in talking about Cisneros to the jury basically said that Cisneros was only important as because he corroborated the testimony of Weathers and Frangelo. In the prosecutor's closing argument, the witnesses he emphasized were Weathers and Frangelo, not Cisneros. And in terms of corroboration, under California law, corroboration can be slight. And the prosecutor noted some other evidence that corroborated Weathers and Frangelo.
But that's the test if now, having a conviction in hand, is not whether the case was sufficient as a matter of law to go to the jury because there was slight corroboration somewhere. The question is, what effect, in hindsight, do we think that it had on the actual verdict in the trial as it unfolded? So I don't think any of our questions are designed to say, well, without him, you couldn't have gone to court as a legal matter, but rather without him you wouldn't have won, which is different, or it's very likely that you wouldn't have, which is a different inquiry.
Your Honor, you're entirely correct that the question here is what impact did Cisneros' testimony have on the jury? And first of all, he clearly was not a believable witness, and even the prosecutor acknowledged to the jury that if you don't believe him, that doesn't, we still have, the rest of the case is still enough to convict him. And so.
Actually, it's interesting as an aside that the prosecutor misrepresented what the testimony was to the jury, because the prosecutor said that Cisneros overheard that conversation, and that's not what he testified to. What he testified to is that he interjected himself into it and elicited that, well, that comment. Well, contrary, of course, to what he had said, told the investigators to begin with, which is what the prosecutor referred to.
Well, responding to the aside, I think attorneys often argue to the jury that their recollection of the evidence might not be correct and that they should turn to the evidence. But apart from that aside, turning back to Cisneros, there's three reasons why Cisneros, his testimony could not have affected the jury's verdict. And first is that he wasn't credible. There was extensive evidence presented at trial regarding his criminal background, including that he had three prior felony convictions, that he had a prior burglary conviction that was reduced to misdemeanor. There was, in addition to that, there was evidence that I believe it was 1973, that he was found to be a mentally disordered offender and that he was sent to the Atascadero State Hospital. So based on his criminal background, based on the fact that he is a mentally disordered offender, his credibility is already suspect.
Why isn't his credibility significant in the context of the co-defendants or co-conspirators, whatever you want to call them? Because the jury would have believed that finally here is an independent, disinterested witness, or that's the impression they had, because he was not involved in this particular crime. He was a sort of a bystander. Why wouldn't he be key for that reason?
Some responses there were again, turning, in addition to his lack of credibility, he already was impeached at trial. Basically, he testified regarding that he got low-term deal, or essentially there's evidence that he cooperated in three cases, one of which was in the current case, which he denied. But there's also testimony, he testified that as to a 1979 case, that he had offered to he testified that he didn't get anything in exchange for testifying against another defendant in that 1979 case. And what happened was petitioner's trial counsel presented Cisneros' prior attorney, his last name was Webb, and Webb basically he said that petitioner was wrong, Cisneros actually did get a deal. So, and then in addition to that, there's evidence that that Cisneros, at the time of petitioner's trial, offered cooperation in another case. So the jury essentially was aware that Cisneros is a serial informer, that this is the third case in which, that there's at least three cases in which he's offered, which is he's presented testimony against other defendants, three including the current one. So aside from Cisneros' credibility issues, his criminal background, his the fact that he was impeached at trial regarding that 1979 case, in addition to that, as noted by the district court, the circumstances of basically Cisneros' version of what happened wasn't believable, because under Cisneros' version, the conversation took place when Cisneros was behind a driver of the jail prison bus. There's a deputy sheriff a few feet away, and it just wasn't believable. And in addition to, aside from those issues regarding Cisneros' lack of credibility, the second point is that, again, Cisneros was not the key witness in this case. The key witnesses were Weathers and Frangelo. It was Weathers and Frangelo who testified regarding when the crime took place, where it took place, that they acted together in formulating this plan to go commit a robbery. And it's clear that Weathers and Frangelo were the key witnesses. Regarding the readback issue, as I pointed out in our briefs, the jury asked for essentially three things. One was readback of Weathers' testimony. And according to the trial court, and I believe it was also the defense attorney, there were problems hearing her tape. They played back a tape of Weathers' interview with the police. And essentially, based on statements from the trial court and the defense attorney, the reason that was read back is because there's problems hearing the tape. And then the other thing that was requested, I believe, was the testimony of, I think it was the woman who found the body. And basically, essentially, they also asked, I think it's entirely, in asking for that readback, that doesn't definitively show that the jury credited Cisneros or believed it was important. And our view, certainly, is that if you look at the items that were requested for readback, these were not issues that were, these are not crucial issues, and it's more in a line of trying to tie up loose ends in the case. Aside from that, the evidence at trial clearly, again, the main evidence was the testimony of Weathers and Frangelo. But that was also corroborated by the testimony of James Saltz and Karen Dunn. Both of them testified that Petitioner threatened Weathers. Saltz also testified that Petitioner threatened them. Dunn testified that she saw Petitioner washing blood off his hands or with blood on his hands or his clothes, and Petitioner saying something about there being one less Mexican. Dunn, Salt, Weathers, and Frangelo all testified that Petitioner participated in cleaning up the van. So based on Petitioner's actions, his threats, those essentially were confessions as well. And so Cisneros is not the only person that testified as to a confession. And specifically addressing the bullets, it was Gecko, G-E-C-O, Gecko brand 25 caliber bullets. And it happens to be that was the same brand and type of bullet was found in the victim's body, and four of those bullets were found in Petitioner's residence. And in addition to that, linking him to the crime, Saltz also testified.
It wasn't his residence alone, though.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
It wasn't his residence alone.
That's correct.
He shared it with his wife in his purse, the bullets.
It was found in her purse. That's correct. But in addition to that, Salt also testified that about 2 weeks prior to the murder, that Petitioner showed him a Raven brand semi-automatic pistol. And these bullets were, there's evidence at trial presented that these bullets were consistent with that gun. And I'm not entirely sure what part of the firearms expert evidence testimony was stricken, but he did testify that in his 6.5 years experience, that he had never come across a Gecko brand ammunition.
I think that went out.
Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure whether that particular portion was in now, but I did want to note that as well.
Fine. Thank you very much. Your time is
I have
expired.
About 40 seconds, according to you.
You're about 40 seconds in deficit.
Oh, that's a deficit. Okay, I I'm reading wrong. But and the final point I want to make with this court's permission is that this test here is under the AEDPA.
We understand that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Giannini.
Your Honor, unless you have questions of me, it's clear the court understands the issues. I don't have any rebuttal.
Do you have anything else?
I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
counsel. The matter just argued will be submitted, and the court will take a very brief recess before hearing the last matter on calendar.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right. Thank you. because I guess the light would turn yellow.
No, it doesn't. It just I don't think so. It just does it.
They were submitted.